Linoleic acid is the foundational building block for synthesizing prostaglandins.
And those are the hormones that actually trigger ovulation.
Right, and sexual arousal. Without those specific plant-based fats, the fish simply don't have the chemical signals to reproduce. Plus, those fatty acids literally build the cell membranes of the developing embryos.
So without them, the eggs just fall apart.
You're structurally compromised, yeah.
A whole new era of communication in the global aquaculture industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds in aquaculture right in your pocket. And what's best? You can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple. Welcome to the Aquaculture Podcast Show, the first AI-based podcast in aquaculture, where you'll find cutting-edge insights in everything that's working in aquaculture, nutrition, health, and production. Inspired by the 2024 article titled Broodstock Nutrition in Neal Tilapia and its Implications on Reproductive Efficiency by Engdahl, Flipos, and Akawaki Yeremu.
Welcome back to the Aquaculture Podcast Show. Today we're jumping into a brand new deep dive. And we're going straight to the microscopic level.
Yeah, we are getting deep into the actual cellular mechanics today.
Exactly. So imagine you're running a massive commercial tilapia facility. You feed your parent fish, your broodstock, a marine oil-based feed, and you get a pretty dismal 18 fry per spawning event.
Which is, I mean, commercially, that's just a complete disaster.
Right, a total loss. But then you swap out that fat source for a specific plant-based oil, and suddenly production absolutely skyrockets to over 1,800 viable larvae per female.
It's an incredible swing.
It really is. So today's mission is unpacking the high-stakes world of broodstock nutrition. We're looking at how the exact dietary makeup of parent Nile tilapia controls literally everything, from courtship behavior to larval survival.
Because the margin for error here is practically non-existent in modern agriculture.
Yeah, and we're grounding all of this in a fantastic 2024 review by Engdahl and Yeremu. It's titled Broodstock Nutrition in Nile Tilapia and Its Implications on Reproductive Efficiency.
It is a phenomenal synthesis of the current data.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A diet forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So think of it like training for the Olympics. You wouldn't feed an Olympic athlete absolute junk food and expect gold medals, right?
No, of course not.
If we want fish to produce thousands of strong offspring for global food systems, their diet has to be micromanaged down to the molecular level. And that starts with the big one, the most expensive ingredient on the farm.
Protein. Yeah, dietary protein routinely accounts for roughly 50% of total feed costs.
It's massive.
It is. Because a boar, if fish can even think about reproducing, it needs the structural building blocks. Mm. And studies generally show the physiological sweet spot for Nile tilapia is somewhere between 30 and 40% crude protein.
Right. But I actually want to push back on that immediately, because the review also mentions researchers like Ribeiro, who found that 44% crude protein is highly adequate for maximizing larval growth.
Yeah, they did see great growth metrics with that.
But, I mean, practically speaking, if protein is this magical building block, why not just feed them 60 or 70% protein?
No.
Isn't there a point of diminishing returns?
Oh, absolutely. And going up to 44% is already pushing it. Beyond a certain point, extra protein doesn't improve male reproductive performance at all, and it just aggressively drains your budget.
Because they just start using it for basal energy, right?
Exactly. If you don't have enough cheaper energy sources in the diet, the fish will literally metabolize those expensive amino acids for energy to defend territory or mate.
Okay, so it's like buying custom-built mahogany furniture to furnish your house, to build muscle and eggs, but you don't have any cheap firewood. So you just chop up the mahogany and throw it in the furnace to stay warm.
That is a perfect analogy. It's a massive waste. And we really need those specific amino acids doing their actual jobs.
Like arginine.
Yes. Arginine directly stimulates ovulation and sperm motility. Then you have tryptophan, which modulates reproductive behavior in stress.
Because it's a precursor to serotonin.
Right. And leucine is in there, regulating gene expression. Without those, the system just breaks down. The review highlights a study by Gunasekera where female tilapia were fed a 10% protein diet.
Oh, wow. Just 10%.
Yeah. And the results were catastrophic. Stunted growth, severely delayed spawning, and the eggs they did produce were entirely unfertilized. Some of the females actually died.
That's incredible. But the ones on 20 to 35% protein did great, right?
Highly efficient. Great hatching percentages, normal larvae, fast yolk sac resorption.
So to stop them from burning that expensive mahogany,
yeah,
we need to talk about the firewood, the cheaper energy sources.
We have to balance the carbohydrates and lipids.
So carbs are basically the gas in the tank. Nile tilapia can utilize 30 to 40% digestible carbohydrates.
Right. It's cheap fuel for courtship and nest building. But if you overshoot the carbs, you get metabolic stress and massive fat deposition in the liver.
Which is obviously bad for egg production.
Yeah.
But the lipids, the fats, this is where the data gets absolutely wild to me.
The oil experiment.
Yes. Fish need 10 to 20% lipids. But the source of that fat changes everything. This is what I mentioned at the start. Broodstock fed cod liver oil produced 18 fry. 18.
It's essentially a total crop failure.
But the ones fed soybean oil produced 1,865 fry. I mean, why is soybean oil this absolute game changer compared to a marine oil?
It comes down to essential fatty acids, specifically linoleic acid. Vegetable oils like corn and soybean oil are incredibly rich in it. Palm oil is also fantastic for larval quality.
So it's acting like high-grade synthetic oil for the reproductive machinery.
Exactly. They don't just provide dense calories. Linoleic acid is the foundational building block for synthesizing prostaglandins.
And those are the hormones that actually trigger ovulation.
Right. And sexual arousal. Without those specific plant-based fats, the fish simply don't have the chemical signals to reproduce. Plus, those fatty acids literally build the cell membranes of the developing embryos.
So without them, the eggs just fall apart.
You're structurally compromised, yeah.
Okay, so we've got the structural proteins, the carbohydrate fuel, the lipid hormones. But the Engdahl and Jeremy review makes it clear that none of this works without the microscopic regulators.
The vitamins and minerals, the micronutrients.
Right, and fish can't synthesize vitamin C, D, or E internally. They have to eat them.
Which is critical because vitamin C, they need about 25 to 119 milligrams per kilogram. And vitamin E, they act as literal shields for the sperm cells.
Preventing lipid peroxidation, right?
Exactly. They stop oxidative damage from tearing the sperm cells apart.
And you've got calcium binding to vitellogenin, the egg yolk protein, and selenium acting as a heavy metal detoxifier.
Yeah, without vitamin E, for example, you see massive spikes in deformed larvae and completely immature gonads.
But then the review gets into functional additives. And I have to ask, because we're talking about giving commercial fish probiotics and spirulina.
I know, it sounds like a trendy smoothie bar.
Right. They have a better wellness routine than I do.
Yeah.
I mean, does a sprinkle of probiotics actually change the economics for a commercial farmer?
Oh, drastically. This isn't just a wellness trend. It's a structural necessity for big ag operations. Feeding tilapia a probiotic like Bacillus subtilis in high concentrations fundamentally alters their gut architecture.
Really? How so?
The microorganisms colonize the gut, actively displacing pathogens, but they also increase the length of the intestinal villi.
Oh, so they absorb more nutrients from the exact same amount of feed.
Exactly. It vastly improves egg production and fry survival. Spirulina does the same thing for the gonadosomatic index, meaning the actual size of the gonads increases.
Wow. And they also mention adding enzymes like phytase, right?
Yes, phytase is crucial. It unlocks the phosphorus bound up in plant-based carbs so the fish can actually digest it.
Which is huge for commercial sustainability. So we're micromanaging the diet down to the cellular level. But the ripple effect of this is that it completely rewires their natural biology.
It dictates their entire behavioral ecology.
Yeah. The review points out that without adequate lipids, male tilapia physically will not build nests. They won't even show territorial aggression.
The biological drive just completely shuts down.
And for females, inadequate protein suppresses vitellogenesis entirely.
Yeah.
She just won't be ready to spawn.
Mm.
But the craziest part is the mouth brooding.
Oh, the energy demands of that are staggering.
Right. Parent tilapia hold the eggs and the fry in their mouths to protect them from predators. They can't eat during this.
So they are essentially starving themselves to protect the crop.
Exactly. And if you fed them a poor diet leading up to that, They don't have the internal fat reserves to survive the starvation period, so they just abandon the eggs or they end up eating them out of pure desperation.
It really emphasizes that successful aquaculture is heavily reliant on these precise inputs.
But that brings up the real bottleneck, doesn't it?
Oh,
it sounds like the science is totally mapped out. The problem isn't a lack of knowledge. It's the economics of sourcing all these perfect ingredients on a massive scale.
That is the grand challenge right now. High-quality marine proteins and highly fractionated plant oils are incredibly expensive.
Right.
The future of the industry, as the authors point out, requires finding cheap, highly bioavailable local feedstuffs.
Right. How do you hit those exact amino acid targets using whatever agricultural byproducts are available locally in, say, Southeast Asia?
Exactly. You have to create an economically viable feeding strategy that still meets these brutal biological demands. And you have to understand how those local diets interact with disease resistance, too.
Because if the diet falters, the immune system falters.
And you lose the whole crop.
It's a massive balancing act.
Yeah.
But it's so critical. As global populations rise, mastering the reproduction of a staple crop like Nile tilapia through this kind of precision nutrition is just foundational for global food security.
It's the only way to scale up efficiently.
Absolutely. Well, we've covered how scientists and nutritionists can literally switch complex behaviors like courtship, aggression, and parental care, completely on or off, just by tweaking the ratio of amino acids and plant oils in a feed pellet.
It's basically chemical programming.
It really is. Which leaves me with this thought for everyone listening. If the profound instinct to protect offspring can be completely erased simply because a diet lacked the specific fatty acids found in soybean oil, to what extent are the behaviors, the moods, and the core drives of other species, perhaps even our own, quietly governed by the invisible molecular baselines of our daily nutrition?
That is a fascinating question.
Something to mull over. Thank you all for joining us on the Aquaculture Podcast Show, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the Aquaculture Podcast Show on your favorite platform. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook to stay updated on the latest episodes and industry insights. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.